my goodness, you are going to love this episode. It's a number 245, Mastering Conflict, Transform Your Leadership Through Courageous and Respectful Conversations. Have you ever felt off guard by unexpected conflict? Like it just seems like it came out of nowhere? Are these uncomfortable conversations, or sometimes you may even feel attacked? Well, today you're getting tools to deal with all of this in a much better way. I'm interviewing Justin Jones Fosu, who is author of the just published I Respectfully Disagree, How to Have Difficult Conversations in a Divided World. And you're going to love it. Welcome to Speak Up, the podcast for high-performing introverts, including you social introverts, where we reveal the charisma and communication secrets of the A-listers so that you get the recognition and the opportunities you deserve. I'm your host, Laura Camacho, your magical communication godmother, coach, and strategist. And remember, we release episodes now every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's almost like a full-time job getting these episodes out for you to be make more money and have more influence at work. You know, we all know the importance of positive work culture, but then there are these disagreements, and sometimes you're just like on your last nerve. And we really need to learn how to handle, master conflict better, because conflict in itself is good. Well, I do think that all of my opinions are absolutely the best ones, but I might be wrong on that. And it's good to hear other ideas. It's good not to have, you know, just to have everybody always agreeing with you all the time. And one of my big takeaways personally on this episode was it's dismissive to agree to disagree, which I have done many times in my life in conversations with people. And I know it didn't go well, but I didn't know what else to do. So now I do know. And other takeaways are some real life examples. Justin is like, he's for real. Real life examples of conflict resolution strategies and how personal experiences can shape your leadership behavior. So many practical techniques. I took notes like crazy, ways to navigate conflict with courage and empathy and encouraging a culture of respect and collaboration. Oh, and we went into apologizing. That's a big, but it's really a transformative practice, even if you're not completely at fault. So tune in right now to get the secrets of effective conflict resolution and elevate your leadership impact in just 30 something minutes. I know you're going to love Justin. Yeah. So we are live with Justin Jones Fosu. He has written a book. It has just come out, and it's called I Respectfully Disagree, How to Have Difficult Conversations in a Divided World. So welcome to the show, Justin. Great to have you.
I am super pumped to be on here with you, Laura. Woohoo!
I love that. I was just talking to Justin about how like the people that I talk to, like we are brave and we are pretty good at having those difficult conversations, but sometimes people are not. And that has a lot of consequences. So we're just going to dive right in. Tell us a little bit about your past. I know that you do workshops and you've been helping people who work in business to be better versions of themselves and more effective. So tell us a little bit about your past. And then what are the hazards of not having those conversations that we really don't want to have?
Yeah. So really great question. I love long walks on the beach. No, I'm joking. But my I love those conversations.
Is it Crest or Colgate?
My path has been one that's very interesting, unique. I always start off with my mom. My path has started off with her because she has been a seed planter and has shaped the foundation of who I am. My mom was a single mom, two rambunctious little boys, really worked her butt off, walking through stints of being unhoused and welfare and all these things to her getting her master's. The things she planted in us growing up were the catalyst for where I am today. So my mom used to make us go to events that we didn't know a lot about and even those that we disagreed with. And I remember sitting there wondering, like, why in the world? Like, mom, like, we don't even agree with that. Why are we here? And she shared later on in life, because she didn't explain it then, and maybe I wouldn't have gotten it then. But as I interviewed her for my book, she shared a story with me. It was powerful. So my mom was one of the first Black female air traffic controllers in the Air Force.
Cool.
And she would share a story where she would be stationed in Japan for 2 years. And she said, Justin, there were some soldiers in that same 2 year time frame that never left base.
Oh my God.
And she was like, Justin, I don't want you and your brother to be like that, to never leave your home base to experience the beauty and people of cultures and the things around you. And, you know, she considers herself a citizen of the world, right? And so what I love is that my mom planted these seeds in me that would help to grow me in a way that were super powerful. So that led me from student leadership and a lot of different things to going off to college, marketing, did my MBA in leadership and organizational learning, working with a top financial firm in corporate training and development, and realizing I started a company almost 18 years ago, realizing that I want to really help people, specifically leaders, to really have a heart-based approach to leadership. And what that grew into was focusing on meaningful work and inclusion. And so that became the heartbeat of the work that we did. How do we bring meaning to our work? And how do we as leaders create what we call the greenhouse effect? Because we don't, you know, as leaders, we don't engage anybody. People have to engage themselves. We just create the best environments for them. And so that became that catalyst. And so I would ask in the inclusive mindset work, I'd make this statement. It's like, we can vehemently disagree with someone's ideology and yet still passionately pursue their humanity. And people would go, and then people would come up afterwards and they would say, Justin, I loved your statement. How do we do it? Or they would say, but what if they do this, right? So they're almost kind of trying to stump me to some degree. And this book, I Respectfully Disagree, became the answer to that, where we dove deep into the research. And we realized as we looked at the research and studies, the hazards are huge. A lot of highlights to this and the statistics that 85% of employees at all levels experience some level of conflict.
And probably it's everybody.
I know it's everybody, but I'm going to give you what statistics say, right? Yeah. They spend on average, and I think it's more than this, but 2.1 hours per week in conflict, which it's about 385 million working days, right? 57% of employees have witnessed confrontation or workplace conflict that led to injury and or personal insult. So there's a lot of, 3 out of 4 of the employees believe their direct manager can manage workplace conflict more effectively. So leaders, there's an opportunity for us. We've kind of at times, and I've done the same thing as a leader of a team, both here and in Ghana. Sometimes it's easier to bury my head in the sand. Right. Unless it really rises to the top. But what we've realized is that if we can model the behavior, if we can give our team the practical tools, the resources to be able to have healthy conflict. Conflict is not bad. I'm very clear on this. Conflict's not bad. Disagreement's not bad. Unhealthy conflict and disrespectful disagreement is the thing that is hurting our collaboration, it's hurting the innovation in our teams, it's hurting people feeling like they can bring their full selves to work. So they spend more time focused on walking on eggshells.
Yes.
And not more time on how can we accomplish the project, the initiative, in more helpful and effective ways. So these are the things that are hurting us and that we as leaders can lean into to help begin making progress, to free our people up to spend more time in innovation, more time towards our projects, more time connecting with people, even people that they fully and vehemently disagree with.
I love that. And I just want to echo from my experience, coaching and training, which is all on the communication side of the power skills set, that yes, you end up wasting and losing more time by delaying, or there's a small chance that it will solve itself. Miracles happen. And it's just so much fear, though, around, you know, getting yourself in a situation where you're ostracized or you hurt people's feelings without intending to, or, you know, just frankly get into trouble. But I want to know one thing specifically, Justin. Is it harder now to have these conversations, or has it always been this hard?
I believe it's always been hard, but it's harder now simply because we've seen media, social media, amplify issues and some level of cancel culture being prevalent. I've talked to a lot of leaders, and some of the work that we do and do with leaders in our sessions, it's, I think leaders have great hearts. They want to solve conflicts. They want to help people. They want to point people to projects. The challenge is we're afraid to say the wrong thing. We're afraid that what we say or how we approach something might be the wrong approach. And so at times what people have done, instead of dealing with it or engaging and leaning in when we're maybe potentially ignorant about issues, right? And I love Carol Dweck's work, right? Because she said, ignorance just means you just don't know something yet, right?
Correct.
And so we've leaned out more because of the ramifications and how much it's been highlighted in society that when somebody even may have had a good intention to do something, the impact that came from it made it much harder. And so that's why I feel like even though it's been hard, it's much harder based upon how it's been amplified within society and even in media.
Yeah, that's a perception I had, that there's the cancel culture and there's, you know, maybe some more sensitivities / awareness, and just doesn't feel like safe for some people to speak up on certain issues in certain rooms. I mean, work is not, you know, your home. It's an ecosystem of its own with its own rules. And sometimes there's these unwritten rules that you're not fully cognizant of. So why don't you tell us a story, either from your experience or your book, about conflict and how you help someone resolve it. And I think one of your examples would be good for people to kind of get an idea of how facing that dragon head on, having the courage. Once you have one conversation like that, other ones will be easier.
I'll give two, because one of the things we're very clear on about leaders is that we model the behavior, right?
Right.
And so one, I'll deal with just myself. So I was having a conversation. I'm big into hiking, and we're getting ready to travel to Patagonia. And I was talking to a guy named Jimmy. I've gotten his permission to use the story. We're excited and we're trying to figure out who's going to go. And Jimmy, he's asking questions in terms of like, well, how many men versus women are going? And I thought that was very odd. I mean, I had just gone through some level of being an advocate for women in the workplace and I'm all these things. I'm really excited. I'm like, well, why are we asking this question? It doesn't matter, right? He's like, really, I'm married. And he was like, I need to be mindful of the perception that's created with equal men to women and what that looks like and how. And I immediately blurted out, I'm not proud of this at all, Laura. I said, I think that's stupid. And so I don't have to think about that, right? You know, at the time I wasn't married, but even now it's being married, I was like, she was coming with me, right? And so, but I was like,
right.
I don't have to worry about it. I think that's stupid. Why would anybody have to think about that? Like, if men go or women go, it's like, you know, you just have the relationship with you. And he immediately got defensive and began to shut down and started, you know, I can tell his voice elevated toward me. We got off the phone call and I felt horrible because I realized I had operated from what we call the superior self. I felt like I was better than him. I was more elevated than he was because I was thinking through the issue differently. And I had to call him back and apologize and say, hey, you know, I am so sorry. I realized that we might have different experiences and approaches to this. If you'd be open to it, I'd love to hear why this matters to you.
Okay, so you just reopened the conversation.
Yeah, and the reason I say this is because oftentimes we come into places like conflict, we come from it from a place of perfection, that we're always going to handle the conflict well, or we're always going to deal with it ahead of time. And I want to be very clear, there's many times we don't handle it well. We don't handle it ahead of time. And what it ends up doing for us is that sometimes prevents us from coming back to a place of apologies and coming back and asking for forgiveness. And so one, as a model of behavior for leaders, we have to model this behavior. You know, even with our book launch coming up, we're telling people one of our challenges is to go and identify someone that you've disrespectfully disagreed with and to be able to share one, an apology, and walk back through the pillars that we share with people to apply. Now, another example from a leadership perspective. And this is going to be very interesting because I think a lot of leaders face this. We initially, Laura, when we started our research, we wanted to help people move from disrespectful disagreement to respectful disagreement. But when we dove deep into research, we realized there's a whole nother category called disrespectful agreement. And disrespect
yes.
happens in two different ways. And I can give you several examples of this. Mm-hmm. One, it happens what the younger generations call gaslighting, where mm-hmm. I could be in a meeting. I'm like, Laura, I think that was a great idea. But then behind your back, I'm saying, Bob, I don't know what Laura was thinking. Like, why would she even say something like that, right? Or on the other spectrum, which is equally as challenging, the person who may not have found their voice yet. So they may have been a child and they were told that children are seen and not heard.
Heard, right.
Or they saw respect or disrespect handled in their childhood or even early in their organization. Or they may be fearful of power differentials. Or we as leaders haven't cultivated an environment where people feel that they can disagree with us. Another example for me is for my team. And I realized that, you know, there's some different cultural things. I have a team in Ghana that works with our company. And there tends to be at times, not all, but tends to be at times, I want to keep things peaceful, low mm-hmm. conflict. So even right. if I disagree, even if I don't think I can accomplish the assignment on time, I'm going to say, yes, go. I'm going to do all I can to try to do it, even if it comes out in the wrong way. So I remember having a conversation with Daria, Director of Operations, and we were directly addressing this issue because we noticed there's always a yes, like, always yes. But there's never like, hey, I don't think this time frame works. I don't think this timeline works. And I remember us having a conversation and I realized the error of my ways. I hadn't created a culture where people felt like they could disagree with me. Like they could challenge my timelines or they can challenge how we were engaging it. And so what we began to do, and we encourage leaders to do the same, is we've now created the space where I intentionally ask people to disprove or to tell me why this won't work. This is the secret sauce behind it. I reward it. And what I mean is not, I don't give more compensation or that, but I call it out. For example, Pa, and I'm like, Pa, thank you so much because that was a really great perspective. Or thank you, I hadn't thought about that. What I'm doing is I am now creating a culture and I'm sharing with the team that is expected. And I'm rewarding people and verbally to share why disagreeing with me is important because I don't want to just have my perspective, my way. I don't want people to operate in disrespectful agreement and it doesn't help us to get better. Why does that matter for leaders? One of the best books I did during my MBA, I had a really cool professor, like a Dead Poets Society, Robin Williams type of professor. And he had us read this book called Dialogue, The Art of Thinking Together. And the whole premise of this is it's not about A and it's not about B. It's how do we create C together? And C does not mean 50-50. In pillar four, we call seek the gray. It's because mm-hmm. often things aren't black and white. There's different shades of it. And as a leader, I have to model that behavior. I have to encourage it. I have to reward people sharing a different perspective than mine because we end up creating something that I wasn't able to create just by myself. So those are two, one from a personal example, yes. but also a leadership example that can help us.
Thank you. And I want to just give you my take on those two examples, which are so good. You can tell they are real. So in the situation with the trip to Patagonia, it does seem like you just shut it down, the conversation, I would say out of impatience. I mean, I totally identify with that, which is like, I have things to do. Don't you know how busy we are? So on that, because these things catch us by surprise, I can imagine myself in your position and you're like, what? Like, where is this coming from? And so you're not prepared and you can react negatively. So I want you to give us a tool for those of us who fly off the handle, maybe. But then I love about, I think, asking forgiveness is a life skill that will change your life. It's very hard. It's easier when you can see, like, well, clearly I flew off the handle and I should not have done that. But sometimes the conflict escalates and it's like, well, I flew off the handle, but he did too, or she just shut down and just got defensive. So tell us something about like when you feel like you were at fault, but not fully at fault. I'm just curious what you're going to say. Do you just like swallow that, swallow all your pride and just apologize for your part And on the issue, on the topic of your person not pushing back, and I've had similar situations because I could not imagine. It was completely out of the realm of my possibilities that anyone would ever be intimidated by sweet little me.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm older, I get it. Like, I probably am a little cantankerous at times. But, you know, when I was younger, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, why would you be intimidated by me? I'm just trying to figure it out. So I think those of you who are listening, I want something to take from Justin's second story is that it may seem like impossible that people can be intimidated by you. But if you're the leader, by definition, there's a power distance. So now I hand you back the floor.
Really, really good questions. I'll start off probably with the last thing you shared, but I think it will set up the foundation for the rest of the pieces. And I want to ask you a question, because who is the only person that you and I can control?
Ourselves.
Yeah, our kids. No, I'm joking. Not our kids. God, I've tried, right?
Let me know. How do you do that?
It doesn't work. Trust me. I've tried often and it still does not work. So ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to come to this conclusion that it doesn't matter if a person loses the cool with me. It doesn't matter if they disrespect me, that I can always choose to respect someone else. And this is why even in the book, we had to redefine respect. And we created what we call the 10 characteristics of golden respect, because we started diving into some of the misperceptions of what and how society has defined respect. Let me give you two. One is that respect must be earned. And we started asking why. Where did this concept come from where we have to earn respect? Why can't we choose to freely give it because the person's a human being? And so one of the things that we've started to ask is we can choose to give it. We call it the distant cousin of forgiveness, because we finally started realizing that forgiveness is not about the other person. It's about me. And so how I choose to show up. That's why I love of Viktor Frankl's work in Man's Search for Meaning, that we always have the power to choose, right? In terms of the gap between stimulus and response.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece of that, the second definition of respect, is that a title grants me respect. And this is sometimes what we've fallen victim to in leadership, is we've seen it modeled that way. And so we therefore think that because I have this title or this position or this prestige or went to a certain school or have this certain era about me, that I deserve respect, rather than every single person, whether it's the custodial staff member to the CEO, deserves respect, value, and dignity, that deserves for us to operate more and more by what we call the equal self. So in our research, we talked about these three selves that we can operate by, and we know we're operating by the three selves. First is superior self, where we are coming off and we appear, we are better, we know more. I'll give you a personal example. As a parent, I've done this because I have more experience, I know better, right? And there's been times where I have completely shut down my 12-year-old daughter from an idea or suggestion that she had because I was operating in superior self. I could have easily have checked and made a phone call to Frankie's, which we were going to. And she said, I don't think we can get in past 3 because we're under 18. I'm like, oh, that's asinine. I know better. I know what they're trying to do. It's like the mall where they don't want teenagers there. And we got there and they couldn't get in. And I'm sitting there like,
oh,
I have to apologize to them on our way back home.
Yeah.
Because I was operating from superior self. I could have taken 30 seconds just to call and check. Right.
Right.
So
right.
Superior self, equal self is where we want to spend more time. But then we have the inferior self. And then we often may see inferior self based upon other people who are in higher positions. And that's where we get a lot more of the disrespectful agreement, is when we come from that place of inferior self. Like, my voice doesn't matter. Why do I have anything to contribute? Even encouraging people making mistakes as leaders. Because when we create a culture where people can't make mistakes or say the wrong thing, people become more and more afraid to be able to say the wrong thing. And that's what we see. I see it. Oh my gosh. I used to work with children often, right? And you would see children, you ask them a question. They're like, yeah, that's what I answer. And the more that they've gotten older, all the way to corporate, you ask an answer, a question, unless somebody is 150% sure,
yes,
they won't raise their hand.
Yeah,
they won't say anything.
Exactly.
I see it in my sessions all the time. They won't even take a leap at it because we're afraid to say the wrong thing because we're convinced that people think less of us. We even have statements like, you know, you're as smart as your silence proves or something like that, right? These are the things that we as leaders have to take an intentional effort to craft the culture of, hey, thank you so much. And that's what I do with my kids. Hey, we had the wrong outcome, but I appreciate the efforts you took in getting there. Like, thank you for reaching out. Thank you for leaning in. The same thing I have to do with my team. That didn't get the results we wanted to, but I appreciate you trying something different and trying something new, because the more and more we do that, the more we'll find things that are going to be helpful. Those are the things that we can do as leaders to help us. Now, for us as leaders in handling this, the conflict and dealing with practical things, one thing happens before any conflict or any disagreement occurs. Mm-hmm. And a thing we call challenge your perspective, that's pillar one. Mm-hmm. And pillar one happens before any disagreement happens. Now, what does that mean? That means that I should be consistently challenging my perspective and hearing different views and even cultivating that within my team so that we're hearing different perspectives, opportunities, and learning from others. Let me give you two examples of that. We encourage a thing called the Circles of Grace Challenge, where every 6 months to 12 months, I challenge myself to go to events, experiences, or engage with people and either I don't know a lot about or that I disagree with. Ode to my mom. Right?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
100%. I did that because I realized I was confining myself to my circles of comfort, to people who believed like me, thought like me, you know, all the things. And so in doing that, it started creating the habit of working out those muscles of hearing different perspectives, and it makes it easier. How does that translate to leadership? So we just walked through one or more so years ago with the Ford Family Foundation, and we did a Circles of Grace Challenge for their team, right? And so they therefore did that. They engaged and found people that they serve within their communities and other things. And they took the Circles of Grace Challenge. And in 6 months, we came back and we talked about what they learned, how they experienced it, cultivating the habit where they're hearing different perspectives. And some came back like, I got that completely wrong. I filled in the gaps with conclusions instead of curiosity. What if we did that with other departments within the company?
Right.
Become students and hear, what's it like being in marketing, right? You know, being in finance, what are your perspectives? What is the journey? What are the things that are important to you? What do you value? Because we often find, and we do it with organizational change, we often find that there's many of the departments that are siloed, they're working against each other rather than working in collaboration because they don't even fully understand what's the intent behind these other areas. And so that's one thing as leaders that we can do is help us become students of other departments, even if it's not mandated by our CEO or leaders.
So I love that. Yes.
Circle of Grace Challenge. Number two, if you find yourself in a place of disagreement and or conflict, and you want to immediately jump in, your emotions have captured you, you know you've operated by that place in your brain that you're now fight or flight. Mm-hmm. One practical tool, right? One, we have to acknowledge that. So self-awareness, emotional intelligence, that's important. But how do we get there? One of the things that's been helpful for me, it's not a foolproof thing. I'll be very clear. Nothing is foolproof until we practice it and intentionally engage it. It's a tool we've created called the Power of Three. And the Power of Three is simply this. We found in our research that most people only listen to Power of One or Power of Two. So imagine you and I having a conversation. I'm like, Laura, how was your day today? And you're like, my day's great. I'm like, oh, my day's great too. It's Power of One. Like, Laura, how was your day today? Oh, my great day. What made your day great? Oh, I had, you know, I heard this interesting bald head speaker. I remember that bald head speaker. That's Power of Two, right? Where Power of Three, where I go to the third level of asking a question, of being a student. And so if I find myself, and this is when I find myself in these places of conflict, I say, Justin, be the student. I literally say that to myself, be the student. And so if somebody says something that now feels like far out of there, far left or right, and I'm just like, I'm not connecting to it. I'm like, why would they think that? I don't have time. I may just jump in and say, tell me more about that.
Right.
Or I don't get it. Like, can you help me understand how you got there?
Or why do you think it's important or something?
Yes. I now put them in the position of teacher. That's why pillar two, be the student, is important, where I focus more on learning and listening rather than lecturing. Those are the things that take practice. And that's why we encourage people to do the Power of Three in our everyday life, because we find that people often do what we call a double Dutch style of communication, where they're waiting to jump in, right? You know what Double Dutch is, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing often, is we're waiting to jump in. We're waiting to share our viewpoint. We're waiting to share why we disagree, why it won't work.
Right.
Rather than filling in the gaps with curiosity rather than conclusions. So those are, to one, spend more time challenging ourselves to work on equal self. How do we do that? A lot of great books on emotional intelligence, all this stuff, but I'm going to be very personal here. I have a therapist. I've had a therapist for a while. I will not stop going to therapy. I may change the frequency, but I'll always go to therapy. Why? Not just because things are going wrong with me, even though my kids will think that there's a lot wrong with me, but because I want to keep things going right. So I encourage people to consider therapy and have it as a part of the regular rhythm of their lives, because it helps me to spend more time in equal self, to be able to say, well, why couldn't I apologize? Why did I choose not to? So that's number one. And then the other, challenge your perspective. Consider doing first the Circles of Grace challenge for yourself, something you don't know a lot about or something that you disagree with. And then maybe as you've done it, maybe you have your team do it. And you could even do it within your own company. And last but not least is the power of three, in terms of being a student, is listen to the level three so that you can better understand where a person's coming from and go beyond the surface, especially in those moments where there's high conflict. Because if you can take out of your hands of immediately jumping in and ask more questions, it creates a more constructive communication.
This is so good, Justin. And I want to see if I can recap that for our audience. And what really jumps out at me is that it's not, well, when he says this, then you say that, and which we often want, I'm often asked for, and you know, questions are good for that. But so Justin has just given us like three constructive things we can do, not to handle a specific conflict, but to just be more conflict strong, like you're just yes. able to manage it better. And, you know, one is therapy. It could be coaching also, where you have an outside professional sounding board. It can be a sanity check. It can give you perspectives in a safe space where you're not, you know, being humiliated or fear of that, you know, with your executive board or something. And it can help you with blind spots. And then what Justin calls the Circles of Grace, which is, you know, exploring other areas in the company, I would say, especially the area where you tend to have more conflict, like lead with curiosity, but to do something specific, not just think about it, not just a Google search, but do some exploring with that area, like what's going on there. And then the power of the third level. And I know just from communication research that when you do follow-up questions, instead of talking about five topics, what's your favorite color, flavor of ice cream, how's your day going, you know, just back and forth, it's more like a ping pong, but really to go, instead of that, to go just a little bit deeper on the topic. And it does build the relationship. If you have a stronger relationship, you're going to be able to handle conflict better.
That was a great recap. I love that you said what you said, because our approach to this and why we wrote this book is a heart-based approach. Mm-hmm. It's to make this a part of who we are rather than something extra we have to do. We call it the tortoise principle. If you see it right above my head, we have a big yes. wooden tortoise that I've
got. Yes, I do see it.
And the tortoise principle for us has been this approach. And we encourage leaders to adopt it. When you have the tortoise principle, and growing up, what do we call the tortoise and the tortoise and the hare?
Right.
We call the tortoise slow.
Slow, right? Slow and steady. Yeah.
The tortoise wasn't slow. We've gotten that wrong all these years. The tortoise was strategic.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. What I love it.
The tortoise slow because we compared it to the hare. Yeah. And we saw what happened to the hare. And for us, the hare is very flashy. It comes out, things happen, right? And so there seems to be like, oh yeah. So you feel like the hare is doing the right thing, but then you see there's no long-lasting sustainable change. And as leaders, we are in charge of creating a foundation that continues to grow as we build solid foundations for change to occur. So why does that matter? Because the tortoise is strategically plodding forward and making progress. How does this matter to our conversation? This is not a journey of perfection. And that's why you can give me 1,000 scenarios that are all vastly different based upon trust, degree of relationship, power differentials, all these things. But we still come back to this heart-based approach of how can I challenge my perspective on a consistent basis? How can I be the student where I focus on listening and learning rather than lecturing? How can I cultivate my curiosity and fill in the gaps with curiosity, not conclusions? How can I seek the gray and find a common ground and or a place that we can create something together? And ultimately, how can I agree to respect? Because I can always choose to leave that person feeling valued, feeling seen, and feeling heard, even in conflict.
Right. I love that. And I think just, you know, you said that there's not going to be a perfect solution or a perfect ending to the call. I mean, there could be in some cases, but there are cases where, you know, I respectfully disagree. Like, I don't think that vanilla ice cream is better than chocolate. That's hard stop. You're wrong and I'm right, but I respect your preference.
You mind sharing why you like vanilla ice cream more? I'm just joking. You know, but I'm practicing.
Yes. Yeah. This has been so good and so rich. I already feel like I have my own personal to-do list based on this conversation. Is there anything else you would like to tell our audience? So you're talking to highly conscientious, high-performing leaders who are always seeking to do things better. We all hate conflict. And I love that, you know, we've given you 35 minutes of like how to be more robust, more resilient, anti-fragile so that you can handle it better. I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, three things at play. One is, and I want to speak to what you said, we hate conflict. I want us to seek conflict. When we can express to our teams that conflict makes us better, healthy conflict makes us better. Friction, we hear it oftentimes, friction makes something better, smooths out things. Like, those are the things that actually make us better as teams, that create innovation, that help us to grow, that create creativity in really powerful ways. So if we can reframe conflict for ourselves and for our teams, I think it'll be a really powerful opportunity for more better collaborations and ultimately better outcomes. But we have to model that behavior. We have to reward conflict. I tell my team often, conflict is great. I want us to have friction. I don't want us to all think the same thing, because we can actually create something better. And more I say that, the more and more I realize my team is willing to lean into that. So that's number one. Number two, I want us to move away from the statement, let's just agree to disagree.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Tell me, what do we say instead?
It's half of what we're after, because I've seen a lot of people agree to disagree disrespectfully, and that it can oftentimes come off as dismissive and that you're just done with the conversation.
Yes.
And so moving away from, let's just agree to disagree, is very important. And number three, I can't say this enough. We can always choose to respect someone. One is that we call it the 3FA framework, that we can, three ways that we can fully acknowledge people. We can fully acknowledge them when we 100% disagree, 100% agree, or partially agree or disagree. And one way that we can do that is by simply fully acknowledging them. Laura, thank you so much for sharing your perspective today. I've never heard that before. Laura, when you said X, you helped me to better understand point number two that you said. Or, oh, Laura, thank you. This is a very difficult conversation. I really appreciate you leaning in. Not once did you hear me say I fully agree with everything that you shared, but I have fully acknowledged you. And if I can take it to that next level of being able to communicate that I better understand how you got there, it allows the research on conversational receptiveness for it to be, people are more willing to have more conversations with you, even ones that we disagree with. There's great research behind that. But that's also built into this statement. I'm really starting to challenge this statement about, we just need to be more open-minded. Lord, there's things that both you and I are closed-minded on. There's things with our values, our character, all these things. But even if we are and choose to be closed-minded, we should always be open-hearted.
Oh!
We have the choice to be able to acknowledge people, to appreciate people for conversations, to do one of the four elements of conversational receptiveness is to hedge our claims. And when we hedge our claims, when I say something, instead of speaking in absolutes like, this always happens, this never happens, or when I'm trying to prove my point, like vanilla ice cream is always the best choice of ice cream. Instead, I can hedge my claims after fully understanding why you like chocolate ice cream the most. I can say, hey, you know what? I can see that sometimes for many people, chocolate ice cream can be really good, but I also can see sometimes vanilla ice cream. That communicates to a person that there's a deeper willingness to actually have a dialogue rather than simply a monologue. That's where we seek the gray. Why is that important? It's an extreme example, but I think it will prove a point. One of my former colleagues is a former skinhead, and I was really curious about his journey, his catalyst, what brought him out, all those kind of things. And I started to ask questions, and I got to the place of just, well, what happened to transition you from being a skinhead to no longer? And he shared, Justin, he's like, to be honest, I loved when people used to call me names. He's like, I love when they call me racist and misogynist and all these things, bigot. He's like, that fueled me. I loved it. He said the catalyst and the seeds for change were the very same people that I disrespected and demeaned that chose to show me respect. He's like, they will never know because mm-hmm. those were like chance encounters or one-offs.
Right. The exception, like, not the rule.
Yeah. He's like, they were the people that caused the did not compute. We started asking, why am I continuing to disrespect people that are choosing to still respect me? We always have the power to choose to respect someone, even if we just consider it a planting of seeds for others. As leaders, let's model that behavior. Let's be that greenhouse to create the culture where people can effectively engage. And if you struggle with that change within it, a really great book, ADCAR, done by ProSide, great change management models, very simple. I love a lot of the change management, Kotter and all these things. But I love that from a very simple, practical way to think through change is that there needs to be awareness of why there's a need for a change. The D is cultivating the desire. K is what is new knowledge I need in order to change. A is what resources and the ability I have to be able to change. And then R is reinforcing that change. And so if you're a leader going upon creating this culture where you want to create more respectful disagreements, then I would encourage you to continue. The one thing that people always normally miss on is the reinforcement. So reinforce. When you see constructive disagreement happening, when you see healthy conflict happen, reinforce it. Reward it. Hey, Sally, Tim, thank you so much. I appreciate you all sharing the different perspectives because you all helped us to see it in different lights. And I think what we actually end up creating and what's better, we're now creating that environment where people can able to bring that forward.
I love that. Well, everybody who is listening, what can I say to you? But you're welcome. I know you're asking yourselves, how is this free? I don't know. But thank you to Justin Jones Fosu for sharing from his heart and his brain and his research and his experience, very practical paradigms and perspectives and actual tools that we can use. Conflict is always going to be there, actually, whether we like it or not. So you might well learn to manage it better. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Justin, for coming. This has been a fabulous conversation, and maybe we'll do it again in the future.
I'd love that. Thank you, Laura.
Have a good day.
Bye.
Wow. Didn't you love that? Was that not just amazing? Justin comes up with so many phrases, like calling his mom a seed planter and the greenhouse effect and the tortoise principle, seeking the gray. I mean, it was one of my favorites. They're all my favorite. But I want you to know, if you're not getting our weekly communication dispatch from Speak Up with Laura, please visit www.speakupwithlaura.com and get on the Speak Up A-list. Have a great day. Thank you for showing up, and I will catch you on the next episode.